Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome back to part two of my chat with creator of Big Boys, Jack Rook. If you haven't heard part one, it's on the feed. And if you have, here is part two. Talking about friendships between straight men and queer men. When I came out to people who I was friends with when I was a kid who was straight men.
You gay?
Yeah. Oh. Well, we haven't said anything yet, but I feel like today's the day.
It's not GB News.
It's the new. What? It's the new setup. You thought it was. You thought it was
GB
News.
GB News would be really fun. We could do GB News, but be Gay Boy News.
That. Oh my God.
Let's do Gay Boy
this
News.
This is Gay Boy News.
Sorry, you were talking about coming out.
No, but when you come out, like you have to recalibrate in an unspoken way what that friendship is, and I actually think they die. Is what I'm saying. A part of it dies.
Yeah.
I think that I used to think one of the things that was so incredible about being gay in a straight world is like the stuff that straight men say in front of you because they think that you're inside the tent on like misogyny and many other things. I just think that's an interesting part of a friendship with a straight man. And I wondered if you related.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've been very lucky. And I'm also, I'm a product of my upbringing, you know. I've always felt like growing up, I spent a lot of time around a lot of very masculine, intimidating men.
Mm.
And men who really asserted a sort of version of masculinity that I never identified with. Some of those men made me feel outcasted because of that. And others recognized my differences and kept on making me feel very included because they could see that the alternative wasn't scary. Me being a bit alternative wasn't as frightening.
Yes.
And to not be... I'm very lucky that my dad was that way. Like, he was a much more alternative type of man. He was still masculine in many ways, but he was like rock and roll masculine. He sort of had a liberalism to him that I don't necessarily think I was ever brought up in a really liberal household. Mm. I was never really brought up in like a left-wing or a right-wing household.
Mm.
Like, I didn't ever have that affiliation with, like, you know, this is politics, this is what you should follow, this is what you should agree with.
Mm.
There are probably moments that flipped between the two. I'm really grateful for that because I think I got a very well-rounded upbringing and a very well-rounded understanding of masculinity.
Mm.
And how that impacted me. And I think a lot of my male friendships that I had, especially the ones that I made at university, were driven by that shared feeling, that shared cultural background, that shared class background. One of my mates, Dom, who's from Nottingham in the straight and like incredibly attractive, like me and him would just laugh about the X Factor. We had the same comedy heroes, the same cultural heroes, like it extended beyond sexuality.
Yes.
And therefore, when my sexuality did then play a part in my identity, I felt very safe and protected that these people saw me for who I was and not just like who I fancied.
Mm.
And I think that's the key thing about Jack and Danny. Jack actually never really comes out to Danny in Big Boys ever. Danny just hears Jack be like, oh, I had a thing with a guy and it fucked up. And he just kind of takes the knowledge. And there's no coming out moment. In fact, even in Big Boys, at the end of series one, there is infamously like a coming out scene.
Yes.
But for me, I wrote it with knowing the coming out trope of all TV shows having a coming out scene.
Yeah.
And to me, it was way more about grief. And it was about Jack being like, there's something about me that I don't want to tell my family because we've already had a stressful enough time losing Dad. And I'm never going to be able to tell Dad something about myself. And that's painful. But he never had any shame about being gay. It was every line of that coming out scene is connected to a sense of loss and never being able to tell somebody a truth about yourself. And I think maybe that's why it secretly resonated with people so much, because it actually was less on the nose than perhaps I've seen those scenes be done before.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also driven by Danny. And it was driven by a straight guy being like, there's something holding you back here that doesn't need to hold you back.
Mm.
Like, you're loved. And there's also something to me where a lot of my friends that maybe have had very vulnerable times have been straight men who haven't always felt very loved and who have conditioned a lot of that horrible masculine, patriarchal, aggressive stuff. And they've really had to be quite brave and courageous to fight against it and to find a place within it where they don't fully identify, but they still know that they look like those guys.
Mm.
And to me, I felt like with the character of Danny, it was good to celebrate someone who is aware of that and still chose differently and still chose more progressively and empathetically, but also still like wanted to fuck a fresher and still like had chat up lines and was still a bit cringe and was still really funny and still laddie. Like, I think we can still celebrate all those things. We don't need to attach them constantly to bad people, if that makes sense.
No. And all of that, you really felt all of that. But also the quality that you're talking about, I feel like, is people who are just confident in, it's secure in their own masculinity. That's the thing, is that, like, if anyone is calling someone else out for being, you know, effeminate or whatever, those things that happen, it's something to do with them.
It's always to do with them.
And that's what's lovely about Danny, is he's not that person. He is that lad, but he doesn't. He's very much like, I'm me, they're them. Cool.
Yeah.
I don't really love people like that.
I love people like that. And they're so much more common. Most people aren't as threatened by difference as we feel. The issue is now is that there's so fucking many of us in the population. And there's so many people now that like, that like we everything that ever
this
happens.
This is now feeling like GB News.
It's now feeling like GB News, isn't it? I'm going to go into some sort of like, you know, we need to, everyone's only allowed one kid. That's not why I'm saying it. But like, there's so much volume to every single person's experience that as soon as a thread of something exists, it becomes magnified, and then something else that can be true is erased. We just have a lot of false equivalences now. We also have no, like, I don't know, I don't want to go too far off the beaten track, but like, we've no counterculture really anymore that feels like it's genuinely counterculture. Anything that is counterculture exists for like 10 minutes before it gets sucked up by the mainstream and becomes like something else, which is something I really feel with Big Boys, because I write something based 10 years ago. If I was to write something based in the mid-noughties or in the mid-90s or the mid-80s, the fashion choices would be so distinctly different. The musical choices would be so distinctly different. Whereas the culture between now and 2024 and 2014, I'm barely writing any differences.
Really?
We can still get all the fucking costume off ASOS today. Wow. We could still get a lot of the palette and the colour palette and the soundtracks or the sort of like textures of stuff. Like, the eras haven't changed as much, because between 2014 and now, counterculture has not been allowed to thrive. Nothing's been allowed to like propel us anywhere different. All we've had is like the rise of more prominence in certain identity groups, which is important and great. But like, as a visual culture, nothing's changed. And I find it really interesting, and I want to like delve into it in my own work. I could be, have been wearing this jumper doing this podcast in 2016, and that 8-year difference, we wouldn't really like, I feel like that shirt, you could have been like, oh yeah, I got that about like 7-8 years ago.
I got this for Christmas, actually.
Whereas and it's lovely.
Thanks.
Stuff hasn't changed visually enough.
It's, well, it's really interesting you say that, because someone was talking about
I sound really conspiratorially mad by saying that?
No, because someone said that to me. I was talking about on this podcast probably 7 years ago, but like, someone said it to me about 10 years ago. It's that the problem, not the problem, the thing is about the internet is that a movement will happen and it can reach everywhere around the world in 15 seconds, should it want to. Whereas before, you had like groups, and it would bubble up in London, and then that might, someone might go to New York and tell someone else, and that might bubble up there or whatever, and it just took longer, which meant it had time to grow a following, whereas actually it doesn't, that doesn't happen anymore. And that, and they were saying that's why normcore came about, because actually everyone's just like, there's, nothing's really happening, so I just wear a grey jumper and I wear you know, don't wash jeans. And then therefore I'm just nothing, if that's what normcore was.
I kind of get that. I just think I've probably, it could be an age thing as well. So I'm trying to be aware that I could be wrong, but I feel like anything anything I bought in Uniqlo 6 or 7 years ago is still being sold in Uniqlo now. And I don't think that, and you could say that says a lot about Uniqlo, but I don't think it does. I think it says a lot about consumption and how we identify ourselves now.
Yes.
There's less like, it's just generally, there's little opportunity for, I don't know, difference to hit in the way that it used to in the past.
Yes, but I don't know if glory holes would have been such a cultural touch point
in 2014.
Because that's true. First choice of Van, now you, having a glory hole moment. And
when was his?
Choice of Van.
Yeah, did he have a glory hole moment?
Yeah, do you remember the new video? The whole, there's this
I let the twinks do their thing. I applaud from the periphery.
Great. Okay, well, I'll skip you up. So Choice of Van has made this new video. Well, it's not new anymore, because it came out 10 seconds ago.
Is it the one that's saying, I feel the rush?
Yeah.
See, like, I watched that video and I was like, I think I made that at A level. It's like, this looks like a video I would have made.
Okay.
Like, there's like 10 Central St. Martin's kids that made that video 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And you're great, Troy. Love you. But that's what I mean. Like, nothing shocks me or surprises me anymore.
Yeah, well.
But it's because I'm old and boring.
No, it's not. But there's a shot in it which is tracking in and out of a glory hole while he's singing. And everyone was like, I can't believe that this is where we are with, you know, mainstream culture. In a good way, not as in a bad way. He has been very, very self-assured in the sense that he's like, I'm just going to do it my way and I'm going to be really, really queer. When he came on the podcast a long time ago, he got a bit of shit because he said, if I was straight, I probably would have done better. And a lot of people got angry about that.
Right.
But he has really stuck to his guns. And this is all in America, which is a more conservative place. And I do think Big Boys is part of that. You know, the stuff that's going on in that show, I don't know if that would have happened in 2014.
I agree. I think you're right. Drinking poppers and looking through glory holes and, you know, webcamming and stuff like that. Yeah, I agree. It maybe wouldn't have happened 10 years ago, but it still requires such a lot of conversation.
What, like in the press or to get it made?
I'm going to try and do this mature thing where it's like, I have a feeling, but I haven't thought about it enough to articulate it yet. So I shouldn't articulate it. I'm trying to do this thing where I just don't run myself down because I'm feeling a little bit like, oh, should I have done that glory hole scene?
Why?
Because I'm like, it's so difficult to know how people are going to respond to something like that. And I won't know how people are going to respond to it for another month yet, because you have to wait a month to find out if anyone's watched your show, because just the TV has changed.
Really? Like,
yeah, I think it's difficult to know if that was a good thing to do or a bad thing to do. I think comedically it was a really funny thing to do. So I always justify things by being like, did that add comedic value and did it feel true to the character?
Yes.
And I'm like, yeah, like I would have looked through a glory hole.
Yes.
I would have been like, what's that?
Yeah.
You know, never in my, well, like just my brain was so innocent and anxious.
Yes.
And that's like a thing that I really feel proud about with Big Boys, is that you've got that central lead gay character who isn't overly flamboyant and self-assured and is just really terrified and really able to be dweeby and anxious. I kind of like that because I don't feel like I've seen that much. I've seen so many strong queer men. And I love that. I mean, and that is a lot written into the character of Yemi, who I think really flies and excels in series two.
Yes.
So there is that part there, but I kind of like the difference. But what I'm sort of saying is, even I, as somebody who's written it and made it and put it out, I'm unsure.
I don't know whether anything lives or dies by moments like that, does it? It feels like it's part of the story and it's calamitous.
I did front row Radio 4 like a week ago. It was like, suddenly sex becomes on offer in that episode and in that scene, and I was like, wow, I never saw it like that.
Interesting.
In my mind I never thought, oh, sex is on offer. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And when it was presented to me like that, and Samira Ahmed, I think, is amazing. I'm probably one of those journalists I quite trust, actually.
Oh, cool.
I really like. But for me, oddly, I didn't see, and sometimes I'm like, I don't know if I'm right or wrong, I didn't see an erect penis coming through a glory hole on a sitcom on Channel 4 as sexual.
Yeah.
But of course it's sexual.
Yes.
But it's interesting to me because I've maybe lightened it in my mind as a sort of like rite of passage experience thing or something that's funny or something that's not as serious. But then a part of me is like, well, no, actually, a lot of people are going to receive this as a sexual encounter moment.
Mm.
But for me, I never wrote it with that in mind. I wrote it like, this is a fun queer experience when you see a glory hole for the first time. It's part of a coming of age thing. Like, it was very desexualized in my mind writing it. But that's what, am I making a bit more sense now? It's like, that's where I'm like, oh, I don't know anymore.
Isn't that because if you're queer, you often end up at like nights where like you're having a gin and tonic outside a dark room and the people are just passing in and out in front of you and you don't want to go in, or you do, but like
it's so normal.
Yeah, it's normalized that like it's sort of hypersexual, and that's what I also love is that Jack is dweeby because he's all us falling into that world and supposedly knowing what the fuck to do.
Yeah,
and we used to go into dark rooms holding hands with each other. So
well,
we
that's
wouldn't...
what they do in series one. I remember me and a friend of mine going in the dark room in XXL.
Yes.
And being like, and me just holding onto my friend's hand and being like, it smells of poo. It smells of poo. And, you know, and then trying to figure out, like, what do all the coded signs mean? Like, if someone's looking at you, does that mean they, like, want to approach you, or they don't want to approach you, or they're telling you not to approach? Like, all of that fear and that scared. Like, I love all that stuff.
Yes.
But, yeah, I don't know. I think you're right. I think it's well, it's about liberation, isn't it, really? A lot of queer people now feel more liberated sexually than ever before. Therefore, we're not going, oh, my God, that's shocking, because there's just been more liberation that's happened. And I suppose that is... to prove myself wrong. Yes, fashion-wise, Uniqlo needs some new fucking clothes. But culturally, in the last 10 years, you know, there's a line in Big Boy Series 2, it's like, the summer 2014 was the gayest summer in British history.
Yes.
The first gay weddings, the first drag winner of Eurovision, and the first brilliant album from Kylie in 4 years.
Yeah.
And then, you know, blah, blah, blah. But in my mind, I'm like, actually a lot has happened, you know. And I always think this about, like, I think a real... joy for me was how well Drag Race UK Series 2 did.
Mm-hmm.
Where I really felt like my mum was saying to me, like, oh, it's Bibbidi Bumboo Lash. My mum's not Northern, I don't know why I went like that. Like, I mean, my friend Dom, who does sound like that, was like, who, Bibbidi Bumboo Lash? Great, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's art.
Yeah.
And like, I just thought that was a real beautiful, that season in particular.
Yes.
Don't know, there are always these little moments where stuff hits the mainstream, I suppose. And I'm being... It's interesting. I think it's like, I've wanted to do this podcast for so long. I feel like I'm doing it at my most like knackered point, where I'm just like, oh,
you're
I don't
doing
know
great,
if
everything's love.
Good anymore. My show's probably shit.
No.
I should put cocks in the eyes of other, like, you know, you just get a bit like,
no.
Panicked, but.
Well, you don't need to, is what I'll say.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Can we also talk about the music? Because I loved the music and I was blown away that you used Kiss Away Trail song at the end of episode 3, because I did the video for that song.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And I was like, I swear that's Kiss Away Trail. And I was like, but
we got 2 Kiss Away Trail songs.
Really?
In Big Boys,
So what, and I, you know, for example, Kylie, It's In Your Eye is happening. In Your Eyes is playing... during the glory hole moment, if that's not a spoiler.
Yeah.
And is that from the album that came out in 2014?
No, In Your Eyes is from Fever. It's from 2000.
Do you remember the video?
No, I don't. Oh, I don't remember that video. Good. Oh, yes. Is it the one where she's like walking? No.
Digital Floor and everyone's like in
red.
Yes, I
do remember
crazy.
It. Kylie Minogue to me is... Like, I really, like, I want, I've been wanting something from that, the previous album to that, Light Years, which is my favourite Kylie record of all time. And honestly, if anyone listening has got a copy of that on vinyl, I will give you £100.
Really?
Because I've been looking for a copy of Light Years on vinyl for years.
Okay.
It's nice to have a Kylie song with a Kiss Away Trail song, with a Hard-Fi song, next to a LaRue song, next to a Romy. Like, I love that. The soundtrack is really the thing that me and Jim Archer, the director, connect on. And he's like a straight guy. And I feel like Big Boys is often like the dynamic of Jack and Danny being translated to the creative relationships I genuinely have on the show sometimes.
That's interesting.
And me and Jim just love music, and we send playlists like every 3 minutes to each other.
Is Gold Panda on there as well?
Gold Panda's on there. Me and Jim had a big row about that. If he listens to this, he'll love it. Mm. We have Gold Panda song You, which to me is Charlie XCX's song You, Ha Ha Ha.
Oh.
Because her first single was just the instrumental of that, but her singing over it.
Oh,
so any time we would have the Gold Panda thing, I would start singing the Charlie XCX lyrics. And Jim was like, will you stop singing that? And I was like, I just think we should go full gay and have the Charlie XCX song. And Jim just was like, no, it's Gold Panda. Get out the edit suite. And I'm quite proud of Jim, because it's so nice to have some instrumental, like, dance track at the end of an ep sometimes. Like, he's my favourite person to work with.
Oh, that's so... And it's nice that he's straight, so you have, like you say, you have that context and relationship. Yeah. And what do people say about straight actors playing gay roles and stuff in the making of this show? Have people said stuff to you?
No, because I don't ask.
Right.
I really, you know, find it a thing where, like, I try to go with my own instincts on whether I think somebody's going to be able to carry the story and the depth of the story.
Mm.
You know, and also we made the pilot in 2018, and I wasn't going around being like, are you this? Are you depressed? Have you had, like, I know John and Dylan and Azuka and Alyssa and everyone sort of personally, and I know the points in which we might have a sort of personal connection, but professionally I'm like, I write for them knowing what they can do.
Mm.
I really believe in telling things as authentically as possible.
Mm.
But, you know, my authenticity in this show is telling a story ultimately of friendship and of grief.
Mm.
And I know that all of the cast have been touched by those feelings at a younger age. And that to me is like enough qualification for me to just be like, well, you get the elements of the pain I've been through, and you get elements of the joy I've been through.
Yes.
And I try not to sort of pry more beyond that. Also, I think because, like, and just genuinely, there is like a sort of employment law thing. I can't really start going on the casting rounds like, and how do you, like, I can't, you actually cannot ask that question.
No.
And I don't think I'd want to, because I like being led by my own instinct. And I think John portrays a tale of mental illness so well, and I don't know what his personal relationship is. And Dylan portrays a sort of queer coming of age with a kind of sense of grief, teenage grief so well, and I don't know what his personal experience is. And Alyssa kind of portrays a very confident queer, and I don't know what his is, other than, like, he did dance videos about 5 or 6 years ago, and I thought he'd probably be able to do some fun stuff. But that's sort of it. I try not to... I kind of go off my own vibe and my own instinct, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, because it's interesting, because I observe it on different things, and I'm always fascinated by what gets jumped on in the Pink News comments and what doesn't. You know, like,
yeah.
It's really interesting how all of our strangers, which Andrew Haig is gay and has directed it, and Andrew Scott is in and is gay, has had, to my knowledge, not that I'm researching it heavily, but Paul Mescal being in it hasn't...
had any backlash.
No, because... No, and yeah.
And I think that's great. I think you trust... Because there's queer people behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's queer people making those decisions.
Mm.
And they're making them knowing the abilities and the empathies and the investment that any actor of any sexuality or identity is making. So you can't... Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think we're maybe moving beyond feeling like one person has to be this in order to play this. And I sort of, you know, there's so much other stuff that we don't have.
Mm.
Like, so I said this to the Gay Times the other day, where I was like, Dylan obviously plays me, and he plays a version of me that I've written that I love. But Dylan is slim.
Mm-hmm.
Dylan is a very attractive, slim boy. My experiences of coming out and being gay were being 17, 18, at one point 19 stone mm-hmm. in that scene and entering queer spaces and feeling just very fat.
Mm.
And that isn't in Big Boys. And no one's annoyed about that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, and I'm not annoyed about that because I chose Dylan and he portrays a lot of other things close, dear to my heart, really beautifully. At the same time, I'm like, name me a fat gay sitcom character.
Mm.
There are none.
Mm.
Like, the commissioning world still hasn't done that yet. We still, and to me, size and being bigger has played a much more intrinsic part of my identity and growing up and coming out than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a story that I'll save for another thing one day, maybe. And maybe I'll write about it, maybe I won't, type thing. But it's interesting because I think I just never want to be defined by things that feel like, well, this is that, and therefore this must be your experience. Because actually, I have found being gay or queer, I'd probably identify as queer more now, really liberating and brilliant. And I've met fantastic, wonderful people and felt a real wonderful sense of community. The only times I haven't is when, like, I felt like my size has been a real point of derision or a point of, like, or, you know, I've just been quite invisible. Mm. It's really interesting to me now that Big Boys is a success. And there are some gay actors who I remember going on nights out with 4 or 5 years ago. And I, you know, knew which one of them's had a dodgy mole on the back of their neck because they just used to stand with their backs to my face because they were like, don't know who he is, don't know what he does, and he looks like that. So like, I saw so many of the back of the heads of, like, your favourite beloved queer actors.
Wow.
Because it's just like I was invisible. And wow. That's something that isn't in Big Boys and I hope to write about at another time.
Mm.
But I think is, you know, I've tried to write that into some other character stories, or that feeling of just because you're big doesn't mean you have to make yourself a joke, or it doesn't mean you have to make yourself, like, you know, you can still take yourself seriously.
And has that changed, do you think? Do you think now it's still the same? Because I, you know, I was listening to someone talk, and this is not said in a way that, like, I'm any better, but someone was being so berating themselves about their weight and stuff. And I was like, God, really? Nothing has changed. You know, like, it's so...
Well, I don't think it's changed in telly, and I don't think it's changed in TV comedy either.
Mm.
You know, my favourite show of all time is Gavin and Stacey, or one of my favourite shows. There's a scene in Gavin and Stacey where Smithy turns to Gavin and says, well, you couldn't be... Where Gavin turns to Smithy and says, well, you couldn't be gay. And Smithy's like, why? And he's like... Oh, fat gays are all outcasts. You know, look at you. And then he goes on to list God. Three fat gay people. And so he's like, oh, yeah, thank God. And I was like, oh, great. To be fat and gay is the worst gay you can be.
Mm.
It's like the worst. And I think that hasn't been reflected on TV any differently yet. I haven't seen any portrayals of it.
Mm.
I really haven't. I'm trying to think, and I'm like, maybe I've seen it, but the character's been like a side character, or but I can't see it ever being. Whereas I've seen size be represented differently and more beautifully recently, but mm-hmm. just not in that way. But I don't. Who knows?
And what about out and about, like on the queer scene? Do you think it's still got that vibe?
Yeah.
Really?
I think so.
Mm.
I think that there are some people who are liberated from it, and who I still think there's a lot of prejudgment. I'm not the person to ask, though, because when you reach a sort of level of, and I don't mean to sound big-headed, but you reach a sort of level of success or cult success, or, like, you know, all of the cast of Big Boys call me Mighty Hoopla famous. They're like, Mighty Hoopla and Gay Pride, it's like you're Princess Diana. Like, you're being stopped all the time. And I was like, yeah, it's quite fun, actually. You know, it's also terrifying.
Yeah.
But, like, my vision of it's a bit skewed now. But I think if you were to ask the average kind of plus-sized queer person, like, what's it like entering some spaces like that? I think sometimes they'll be like, it's got better. And other times they're like, it's just as alienating. There was like a gay press event thing that I had to go to last year. And I just remember being like, I feel fucking shit.
Really?
And there's nothing worse as a bigger person than than feeling incompatible with either doing your job or being in a social situation because of your size. Mm-hmm. I had it sometimes when, like, I've done photo shoots for things, or I've done little small kind of cameo, tiny roles and things, and nothing has fit me. Mm-hmm. And it's the worst feeling in the world, because you just feel incompatible with your job.
Yes.
And it's because somebody has just forgotten that you are different. And that happens, right? Mm. I try to take it less personally, because it does just happen. But it is a difference.
Yes.
And it can be just as alienating, even if you're... Am I saying the right words now?
Yeah. We're still on course.
I'm often... Anytime I'm ever photographed, I'm just wearing my own clothes.
Yeah.
Because I've just... There's been so many times where someone's gone, I like what you're wearing. I like what you're wearing, and it's you, isn't it? And I like that because it's you. So I think you should wear that for this photo.
Really?
And I'd just be like, yeah, because nothing on that rail is going to even fucking go over my tits. But, you know, and I don't want to, like, complain about it. I could go and get a stylist who might buy loads of clothes that would fit me and source them. So, you know, it's just, there's solutions to it. But, like, I think the average queer plus size person still feels very alienated at times.
We need to end with one final question here, Jack.
Yeah.
Does Mel B really own toilet rolls from Buckingham Palace?
I don't know. I think maybe I read that somewhere, that Mel B went to Buckingham Palace and stole a loo roll.
It's a good thing to steal.
I hope she has.
Yes.
I really love Mel B. I feel really, like, really protective over her. Think she's like... I kind of like how gregarious she is, and so I hope she had stolen lots of loo rolls from Buckingham Palace. I can't remember. I went somewhere fancy, and I stole a loo roll, and now I can't remember where it was. It was probably, like, I don't know, Dishoom. I finally managed to get into Dishoom on Carnaby Street. I stole a loo roll.
Now, get in touch, stay connected on Instagram at Homo Sapiens, on Facebook at Homo Sapiens Podcast, on TikTok, don't know what we're called, but just search for us. We're big on TikTok. And email your comments, your questions, and your agony uncles to hello@homosapienspodcast.com. Next week, it's another exciting episode. We've got British-American fashion designer Harris Reed, who... designs all Harry Styles' amazing clothes, put Harry Styles on the front cover of Vogue in a dress, designs for Beyonce, designs for Adele, designs for Mariah Carey, we talk about that. Amazing, incredible clothes that are really inspiring. He is the one who did that outfit for Iman at the Met Ball, which is the huge gold halo thing. Has dressed Munro Bergdorf, in fact. He's coming to talk to us about his new book, Fluid, and all the inspiration about that. And it's a really lovely chat with a wonderful person. So that's coming up next week. Put that in your diary, people. Thank you very much for listening, and sending you all lots of love. Bye for now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Powered by Spirit Studios.